Today, inshallah, we're going to be doing something. It is potentially controversial, but inshallah, we're going to navigate this through without any controversy. It's a very sensitive topic, but it is a topic that needs to be discussed. We just finished the 10th of Muharram, the fasting that we have done. And throughout the last week or two, we talked about the blessings of the 10th of Muharram from our Ahl Sunnah tradition. I purposely delayed bringing the controversial stuff till we are finished with this time frame. And today I wanted to touch briefly upon the issue of the controversy on this date. As most of us are aware, and the next generation is becoming aware, and there's no point hiding this, the 10th of Muharram is a very disputed date amongst the two strands of Islam. We, the people who follow the Sunnah, Ahl Sunnah, we consider this a day of ibadah, a day of fasting, a day of rituals. The other non-Sunni movement, they take this as a day of mourning, as a day of importance because the grandson of the Prophet ﷺ was massacred on this day. Now, I've given a long talk about the incident of Karbala. Today, I wanted to touch briefly about another contentious issue, and that is the persona or the figure of Yazid ibn Muawiyah. Yazid ibn Muawiyah. How do we view this person, this Khalifa? Because he was a Khalifa of the Umayyads. What is our position about Yazid ibn Muawiyah? So let us begin by setting up the stage. Who is Yazid ibn Muawiyah? He is, of course, the Khalifa that was given power by his father Muawiyah. Muawiyah is a young Sahabi. By young Sahabi, I mean he saw the Prophet as a teenager. He is not to the level of Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman, Ali radiallahu anhu. He's not of the Ashra Mubashara. The Sahaba are many categories. Ibn Hajar has 10 categories. The last batch of them, those who embraced Islam at the conquest of Mecca. That's the last batch, and that is Muawiyah radiallahu anhu. So he is a Sahabi. Because he is a Sahabi, so we have a theological belief about him that he would never do something against Islam intentionally. He would never intentionally want to, astaghfirullah, lie about the Prophet or something like this. So he comes under the general rubric of Sahaba. When he became the Khalifa, he decided to put his son Yazid as a nominator. He's going to put his son Yazid. And as you know, this transformed the Khilafah from a shura to a dynasty. So this was a very historic, by historic I don't mean positive and negative. Historic means something important happened that changed the course of history. He decided to put his son Yazid in charge. Many of the senior companions during Muawiyah radiallahu anhu's lifetime objected to this. They did not give the oath of allegiance, including Abdullah ibn Umar, including Abdurrahman ibn Abi Bakr, including Abdullah ibn Zubayd. These are all sons of the senior Sahaba. They refused to give the oath of allegiance to Yazid when Muawiyah was alive. Soon as Muawiyah passed away, Ibn Zubayr, as you're aware also, he broke away. He established his own caliphate. And Hussein as well marched to Karbala and wanted to fight against Yazid. Yazid sent his forces. And Hussein radiallahu anhu was killed. A very, very huge tragedy. No Muslim is happy at the massacre of Karbala. No Muslim defends the death of Hussein radiallahu anhu. Our hearts are grieved and sad that the Ummah of the Prophet ﷺ surrounded the grandson of the Prophet ﷺ. Members of the Ummah surrounded the grandson of the Prophet ﷺ, laid siege to women and children, including the grandson, including the great grandsons of Fatima and granddaughters of Fatima are in that caravan, and eventually massacred many dozens of men, and all of the women were taken prisoner and then eventually set free and sent back to Medina. It is a tragedy according to all interpretations of Islam. The question, what is the role of Yazid in this tragedy? And how much blame does he have? So we begin by saying that Yazid ibn Muawiyah is not a companion. That's the first point. Hence, he didn't see the Prophet. He was born after the Prophet. Hence, there is no theological status given to the children of the Sahaba. It's a very important point. The children of the Sahaba are completely normal. Some are good, some are bad. Doesn't matter. In fact, FYI, you can look up the books of history. The main general that was involved in the massacre of Karbala was one of the sons of Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas. Big tragedy. He's not a companion. The son of Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, Umar ibn Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, was actually the general who was besieging Hussein radiallahu anhu. The children of the Sahaba are not special status. Some are good and some are other than this. So Yazid is a child of somebody who saw the Prophet ﷺ. It doesn't give him any special privilege. Now also, of the things about Yazid as well, is that a number of things happened in his khilafah that compounded his notoriety in history. Not just this. Al-Dhahabi mentions, his khilafah began, he was only khalifa for 2.5 years, very short period of time, barely 3 years. In those 3 years, three tragedies, one after the other, each one of which is a huge tragedy. Imagine happening in one caliphate, in one reign. His khilafah begins with the massacre of who? Hussein. That's how his khilafah begins. And it ends with his army surrounding Mecca, throwing catapults and destroying the Kaaba because Ibn Zubayr rebelled against him. Ibn Zubayr had his caliphate. And in the middle was the massacre of the people of Medina. SubhanAllah. Yani for those who don't know all of these sordid details, you can listen to a lecture of mine online. It's a very generic title on purpose. It is called Some Incidents in the First Year of the Hijrah. That's the title of my video lecture. Some Incidents in the First Year of the Hijrah. You can find that online. You will find this entire episode. And the reason I say this is because we need to know our religion is divine, our history is human. Our religion is divine, our history is human. And having a khilafah and having political independence, there's a lot of perks, a lot of positives. But just because we have political independence doesn't mean we're going to be Jannah on earth, everything will be rosy. No! We have sometimes the worst massacres and the most brutal things happen under a khilafah. All of this happened under a time when the khilafah was actually pretty strong, yet still so many things happen. So yes, to have political independency is good, but we should not romanticize this notion of just because we'll have a khilafah, all problems will be solved. Doesn't work that way. Read history and you will understand this reality. In the first century of the Hijrah, in this time frame, three things happened. The massacre of Hussein, radiallahu an, the plunder of Medina, which was a very brutal plunder. 3 days and three nights, the forces of Yazid were killing and looting and raping and pillaging the entire city of Medina. And then after that, the army goes to Mecca and wants to fight Ibn Zubayr, and they throw catapults against the Kaaba. And the only reason they stop, Yazid passes away, dies, the news comes to the army, so the army cannot continue. That's why they go back, and Ibn Zubayr is given a respite of another few years, so he remains in Mecca as another potential rival for many, many years, until finally he is brutally killed by Hajjaj ibn Yusuf, and that is, I also spoke about that in another lecture that I have given. So another point we need to know that Yazid's time frame, as Imam al-Dhahabi says, there was no barakah in it. It began with the massacre of Hussein. It ended with the destruction of the Kaaba, and in the middle was the pillage of Medina. What an evil legacy overall. And because of this, from the beginning of time, the majority of people did not like this persona. The vast majority of people did not like this persona. Now, one other point needs to be added before I go over the spectrum, and that is, some people say that Yazid comes under a hadith in which the Prophet ﷺ said, hadith is in Bukhari, the Prophet ﷺ said that أَوَّلُ جَيْشٍ مِّنْ أُمَّتِي, the first army of my ummah that shall besiege the city of Constantinople shall be forgiven. This hadith is in Bukhari. أَوَّلُ جَيْشٍ يَغْزُو مَدِينَةَ قَيْصَرٍ, the city of Qaisar is Constantinople. The first army that is gonna besiege the city of Qaisar shall be forgiven. And a number of early and medieval historians, they said, and they made the claim, Yazid was the leader of that jaysh. And that was the jaysh or the army that Abu Ayyub al-Ansari was a part of. And Abu Ayyub al-Ansari passed away. Okay, pause here, footnote. Abu Ayyub al-Ansari, the famous companion whom the Prophet ﷺ lived with when he migrated to Medina. Where is his qabr? In the modern city of Istanbul. In Istanbul today, you can go and visit his alleged qabr, right? How did his grave end up in Istanbul? How did Abu Ayyub al-Ansari's grave end up in Istanbul? How? Because he was a part of the army that besieged Constantinople, but they were not successful. Now, the claim is that Abu Ayyub al-Ansari's army was led by Yazid, and therefore Yazid comes under the hadith that the whole army shall be forgiven. And many of the scholars who were sympathetic to the persona of Yazid, they used this hadith. And to respond back to this point, actually, Ibn Jarir al-Tabari and Ibn Asakir and Khalifa ibn Khayyat and others, they mention a fact that seems to have overlooked some of these great giants with utmost respect to them. And if I point out this, it doesn't mean I'm disrespecting the camp who said this, but it is a historical fact. Actually, Yazid was the commander of the second army, not the first. And this is well known. At-Tabari mentions this. If you look up the history of At-Tabari, he says in the year 45 Hijrah, Abdurrahman ibn Khalid ibn al-Walid, the son of Khalid ibn al-Walid, led an expedition to Constantinople and it had in it so-and-so of the Sahaba. Then in the year 49 Hijrah, Yazid led an army and in it was Abu Ayyub al-Ansari. Ayyub al-Ansari passed away. So Yazid is not the commander of the first army that went to Constantinople. So this is something you look up historically, and those who claim so, utmost respect, they seem to have overlooked there was one army that went before. Hence, that hadith does not apply to Yazid. Now, other scholars point out, even if you want to say that this is a generic hadith, this does not mean that every single person will automatically be forgiven. Rather, the hadith is general and there can be specific exceptions. And especially when somebody does extreme dhulm like this person did, doesn't mean we take a general hadith and use it to forgive specific dhulm. Nonetheless, these are generic points to point out that, what am I trying to say before I get to the actual lecture here? That is, there is nothing special that we can mark Yazid with as having been forgiven or a sahabi, no. Rather, he is just like any person of his era. Now we look at the negatives he has done. Now, the brief lecture I'm going to give, because this is a very detailed topic, I wanted to introduce to you that within our Ahl Sunnah scholarship, there is a spectrum of opinion about Yazid ibn Muawiyah. There's a spectrum of opinion. And you have the entire line, the entire spectrum, from outright kafir to defending him. We have this entire spectrum historically. I'm just giving you the facts right now. I'm not giving you my opinion right now. I'm simply telling you, you should be aware. Why is this the spectrum? Because, and this is the key point, we do not believe that the incident of Karbala is a theological one. It is a historical one. So if somebody has another opinion about the interpretation of the events, it doesn't make that person a deviant, a heretic. No. Karbala took place after the death of the Prophet by 50 years. You cannot, there can be no theology. The Quran has been finished, revelation. The Prophet is no longer amongst us. Karbala and the massacre of Hussein is a historical tragedy, not a theological one. Our theology doesn't change. Iman doesn't change. Allah and His Messenger doesn't change. The Quran does not change. It is a historical tragedy. Therefore, if a person differs about interpreting the blame of Yazid, we can disagree, but the person doesn't become a heretic, a wrong belief. You understand the point here, right? From our perspective, the tragedy of Karbala is not something that is a part of our theology. It's a historical tragedy. And therefore, if a person disagrees about what percentage of blame to give to Yazid, because that's really the question. That's really the question. The question is not, was it good to massacre? A'udhu billah. Nobody says this. Nobody says this. Everybody is angry and curses the actual killers of the Prophet's grandson. Who can possibly sympathize with them? No Sunni, much less anybody else, is going to sympathize with them. The question is, what percentage of the blame is on Yazid? How much did he know? How much did he command? How much was he tacitly aware? Or was he innocent completely, and it happened and he didn't want it to happen? You understand the question here, right? Depending on how you answer that question, you will get the spectrum of opinion, right? And we do not say that this is a theological question. It's a historical question. So if a person has a different analysis, if somebody says Yazid is 100% guilty, well then that person is going to curse Yazid, right? And if somebody says, no, Yazid did not command it. Rather, this was Ibn Ziyad who did it, the governor of Iraq, not Yazid himself. Yazid is in Damascus. Ibn Ziyad is in Kufa, the governor. So the governor and the Khalifa, there's no phone call. There's no WhatsApp and messages. It'll take 3 weeks for the messages to come. So if somebody says, Yazid did not command the killing. Ibn Ziyad commanded it. Then he's going to get angry at Ibn Ziyad and he's going to say, Ibn Ziyad is the governor. He's going to say Yazid is faultless. In our understanding, as we said, whatever position you hold, you can agree or disagree, you are not an evil person for historical analysis. As long as we agree that the killing of the Prophet's grandson is a major sin, it is one of the worst crimes, no doubt. We all agree to this, but who's guilty? Now, with this caveat, with this intro, inshallah ta'ala, let us go over the quick spectrum. And of course, I have a much longer lecture online. This is just to introduce you. We'll begin from the far right. Who is the far right? Those who excommunicated Yazid. They said he's a kafir, he's not even a Muslim. And you have small groups here. The far right, the far left, minority opinions. So those who said he's a kafir, they're very few in number. Of them is the historian Al-Mas'udi. He's not a theologian. And in fact, some say he's not even Sunni. Mas'udi could be from the other group, but he's a famous historian. Mas'udi has a remark that says, let me quote it for you. Even Fir'aun was more just amongst his people than Yazid to the Muslims. Yazid is worse than Fir'aun. Okay, so he's completely excommunicating him. You have also Ibn Aqil al-Hanbali, consider him to be a non-Muslim. Al-Alusi, the famous Mufassir. Al-Alusi, great scholar of tafsir, mainstream Sunni. He said that the one who killed the grandson of the Prophet ﷺ, it is not possible that he has iman. Not possible. Just like he said, if somebody threw the mushaf on the ground and he knows it's the mushaf, are you going to say he's a Muslim? No. So too, the one that intentionally killed, and then he says that Yazid gave the command. So if you believe Yazid gave the command, you believe this, then you are going to go to the position of he's not a Muslim. But this is a small minority opinion. Another opinion, which is more mainstream, is that he is an evil Muslim and we should curse. We should put Allah's la'na. The general rule, we don't give la'na on another Muslim, right? The general rule, we do not say Allah yal'anak or la'natullahi alayk. We don't say this. But a group of scholars said, we should curse Yazid. Exceptions are made, and Yazid is one of those exceptions. And this is a very well-known opinion. And we have, for example, Abu Ya'la, the famous Hanbali scholar, allowed this. The famous Shafi'i scholar, Ilkiya al-Harrasi, he was very explicit in this regard. He said, so-and-so has two opinions. You should curse, you should not curse. So-and-so has two opinions. You should curse, you should not curse. As for me, I have one opinion. It is wajib to curse. I'm going to curse Yazid. So you have this opinion as well. The famous theologian Taftazani, who wrote a book of Aqaid, Aqaid al-Taftazani, he put it as a point of Aqidah, a Sunni Aqidah, that we are going to curse Yazid ibn Muawiyah. So you have a position that you're going to curse him. Ibn al-Jawzi, the famous Hanbali alim, mufassir, sheikh, and historian. Ibn al-Jawzi is an all-rounder. He's one of the luminaries, died 595. Ibn al-Jawzi wrote a booklet. And in that booklet, the point of the booklet to prove that we're supposed to curse Yazid ibn Muawiyah. So we have that opinion. It is fairly mainstream. Now, the next on the spectrum. So you have, we curse him. The next on the spectrum, we strongly criticize, but we don't say la'natullah. We don't use la'na. We strongly criticize, but no need to give Allah's la'na on a person who said the kalima. Whatever his crime, no need to say the la'na. This position, perhaps I would say, is the majority opinion of Ahl Sunnah, historians and theologians. If you look at and compile, and I've done my little bit of research in this regard, in my humble analysis and opinion, this is the majority of our scholars, they are on this wavelength. We don't like Yazid. There is no defense of Yazid. We criticize Yazid. We harshly criticize Yazid. But there's no need to invoke la'na on anybody who says the kalima. And this is the position of many scholars. Ibn Asakir, Ibn al-Athir, Ibn Taymiyyah has many times said this. Ibn Taymiyyah said that people went to extremes with regards to Yazid. Some defended him and some considered him to be a saint. And the others considered him to be a kafir and said, you must give la'na. And he goes, ask for us. Yazid was a king amongst the kings. And he has many evil things that he has done. And of his biggest crimes, according to Ibn Taymiyyah, is that he did not reprimand the killers of Hussein. Ibn Taymiyyah's analysis is that Yazid did not command the killing of Hussein. But when the news reached him, he did not punish the perpetrators. So that's a problem. If you didn't command it, then you should punish those who did it. But he didn't punish. So Ibn Taymiyyah says he deserves to be criticized for this. And that is his analysis. Al-Dhahabi as well, as I said, Al-Dhahabi says, Allah did not put any barakah in Yazid's era. There was no barakah in Yazid. He began with the massacre, he ended with the destruction of the Kaaba, in the middle was the pillage of Medina. There was no good in the time of Yazid. Also, Ibn Kathir has a lot of harsh words for Ibn Kathir the Mufassir, Ibn Kathir the historian, has a lot of harsh words for Yazid, but he doesn't curse him. So this is the majority middle position. Now we turn towards the other side now. We're going on the barometer, right? From kafir to la'na, to get angry but no na'na, now we go to the next position. What is the next position? We stay silent and it is prohibited to give la'na, and maybe even we shouldn't criticize. Maybe we shouldn't criticize. So this is the position of a number of scholars, most famously Imam Al-Ghazali. Imam Al-Ghazali had this position, that we should be silent and not criticize and definitely don't give la'na to Yazid. Also, Imam An-Nawwi had the same opinion, that we leave his affair to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and we should not give la'na to any Muslim. So they were very much opposed to criticizing and just be silent and don't give any la'na. So this is one position. Then we get to the final opinion or the final spectrum. What is the final spectrum? Did anybody defend Yazid? There is a small group of people who defended the persona, but not, as we said, the massacre of Karbala. As we said, nobody in Ahlul Sunnah defended the massacre of Karbala. Alhamdulillah, nobody can do that. It goes against Iman to do that. But there were few people, they said, Yazid is 100% innocent. No blame whatsoever. He has no blame for Karbala. And therefore, they defended some of the good, whatever good they found in the history books, whatever, they defended. And in particular, there was a theologian in 5th century Damascus by the name of Abdul Mughith al-Baghdadi. He wrote an entire book, Fi Fada'ili Yazid, regarding the blessings of Yazid. And in it, he tried to find ways to exonerate and whatnot. And it was because of this book, we said, remember that, Ibn al-Jawzi wrote a book criticizing Yazid. Remember that? It was because this scholar wrote a book praising Yazid that Ibn al-Jawzi wrote his counter to this. And he blasted the scholar and he said Yazid should be cursed, etc., etc. So we have this entire spectrum over here. To conclude, the position that a person holds regarding Yazid is not a point of theology. Hence, we should not make it more important than it is. It's a point of history. We should also avoid sectarianism in this regard. Sectarianism, it is my humble opinion, you have heard me speak a lot about this, that these sensitive issues, there's no point ignoring them because our children are asking. If I don't talk about it, they're going to listen to other people and they're going to give a different perspective. The internet has opened the floor for everything. So there's no point ignoring. We cannot tell our children, don't ask. They're worried, they're concerned, they're asking questions. So I believe the best way to present as neutral as possible without riling up hatred, without making people hate other people. We can teach without preaching hatred. That's what we're trying to do over here. And you know, by the way, it needs to be said, in Albuquerque, the series of murders that occurred, right? It's because of now we found out sectarian hatred. We don't want to do this, a'udhu billah. We need to rise above this. There must be a way to teach the differences without teaching hate. I hope, inshallah, I can and others can do this. So, bottom line, to conclude, the massacre of Hussein is a tragedy of the highest magnitude, and it is a historical tragedy. No mainstream Muslim defended and was happy at the death of Hussein radiallahu ta'ala an. Whoever is responsible for that murder will have to face Allah with the most precious blood on his hands. The most precious blood, the grandson of the Prophet, that person will have to face the wrath of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The question though, how much was Yazid liable? What percentage did he have in all of this? And I said there's a whole spectrum of opinion, and I will give you now at the end of this my own personal opinion. Take it or leave it, it's not a point of theology. I have read with my own research, you can take it or leave it. I have opined, it's an opinion, that it is not fair to exonerate Yazid even 80%, 90%, 70%. On the contrary, Yazid was the one who sent a brutal military general with the commands, make sure Hussein does not get to Kufa. And that's it. He left it open. He left it open. If he wanted to protect Hussein radiallahu anh, it was his job to make that point. You know, when the government wants to catch a criminal, they say dead or alive, or they say we want him alive. Correct? You know, to this day, when the government wants a criminal, they'll give you two options. Dead or alive, or no, we need this guy alive. Make sure you don't kill him. Whoever wants to get the bounty, you have to give him to him alive. This is the way of the world. Everybody does this. The fact that Yazid was ambiguous is a crime right here. Now, on top of this, the claim that Yazid was not happy at the death of Hussein radiallahu anh, in my opinion, is not correct. Multiple early textbooks mention that he was initially happy. Even Ibn Kathir records this. Also, in my opinion, and this is very gruesome, but I'm sorry to be blunt, you should know this. This is our history, and it's better you hear it from me. The head of Hussein was brought to Damascus, and it was displayed to Yazid in the palace of Yazid. And Yazid poked it with a stick. And one of the Sahaba stood up and in anger said, how dare you poke the face of the grandson of the Prophet ﷺ? I saw the Prophet ﷺ kiss that very face, and here you are poking it. I'm sorry, we have to be clear here. How can this person be defended? Not saying you have to give la'na, but there is no question that this is a person who will have to answer to Allah. On top of this, if you know what happened in Medina and the evils that happened for 3 days and three nights at the explicit command of Yazid, and you know that he told them to attack the Kaaba, how can you have any sympathy for such a person? My position is that of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, and with this we conclude. Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal was asked by his son Salih, his son Salih asked him that, do you narrate hadith from Yazid? He said, how can we narrate from a fasiq? How can we narrate from him? So he said that, so you're saying we don't have any love for Yazid. And Imam Ahmad said, can anybody of Iman have love for the one who commanded what he commanded? Can you have love for this tyrant? Wallahi, we get angry when the tyrants kill people in masajid, when the tyrants do things in our modern lands, right? How about somebody killing the grandson, somebody attacking Makkah, somebody attacking Medina? Both holy cities were attacked explicitly at his command. Explicitly. And the attack of Makkah and Medina, no ambiguity. You know, Yazid, okay, I admit he didn't say kill Hussein, but he left it open, and when it happened, he showed happiness. As for Makkah and Medina, there is no ambiguity. He said, attack Medina and do as you please for 3 days. He said, attack Makkah and get rid of Ibn Zubayr. Khalas, he has made the haram halal. The haram of Makkah and Medina. Why is it called haram? It's sacred. He made it halal. So Imam Ahmad said, how can anybody of Iman love this person? That's what I agree with. Then his son said, so then should we curse him? And Imam Ahmad said, have you ever heard me, my tongue being vulgar and saying, la'natullah, la'natullah? Have you seen this adab from me? That's not my adab. I don't need to do this. We leave his affair to Allah, but there is no love in my heart at all for this person. And what he did, he has to answer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for. And the one who curses, I understand. And the one who follows Imam Ahmad, I personally sympathize. But the one who defends or goes to the other extreme, in my eyes, I don't agree with this. But he doesn't become a heretic. He doesn't become somebody who has a wrong opinion because his analysis is different than my analysis. And with this, inshallah, I hope that I have clarified some points. I know other questions will be raised, but inshallah, maybe we'll answer them in another lecture. And I encourage you to listen to a number of lectures I've given online, and I've given you the references in my library chats. Jazakumullah khair. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.